bait is still, oh, it's gonna take all the jobs or it's a bubble, nothing's gonna happen. No. You need to understand your context. In a highly leveraged system, it'll take some jobs, and that will be more than enough. And critically, to your point around the whoosh down, the thing that is really troubling, this isn't like, hey, we just need to get a shot and everyone can go back to work. They ain't ever going back to work on a lot of these things. No, people say, well, don't worry, they'll figure out something. What else did Blockbuster Video do after Netflix? What did the strip malls do after the internet? Like, are we all gonna become tanning salons? Because like everywhere I go, like, there's tanning salons everywhere, right? What's the white collar equivalent of everybody becoming tanning? Are we all gonna become painters? Come on. Like, I think you understand. I certainly understand. I live in a part of the country, the Rust Belt. We've lived through this once, and it might be a huge advantage to me for this cycle, which is, to me, this is so reminiscent in almost every layer to when the United States let China in WTO or China sent a WTO, and we offshored blue-collar jobs to China. That was just an AI productivity boom. That's all it was. You know, there's a very little functional difference between an AI agent doing something in hours for no cost versus, you know, a Chinese factory worker doing something in a day instead of a couple of weeks for basically no cost and no environmental, no regulatory. It's just a matter of degree. And I can tell you how that went. 35% of the manufacturing jobs went in 7 years. They never came back. They still have never come back. This is 25 years later now. White middle-aged Americans kill themselves at unprecedented rates, much more akin to those in 1990s Russia, when they lost their meaning. Suicide, alcoholism, overdoses. More than 1 million Americans dead in 12 years, 08 to 2020. And so I'm very concerned about this, not just from an economic standpoint, because again, once these jobs go away, the Fed's response is, well, let's just print money. Print money for what? What's going to, like, all you're going to do is bid up asset market. Okay, well, are you going to do UBI? That might be where this goes. That then has huge political implications, has huge inflationary implications. There is a period of time between where we are now and sort of this utopia that technologists point to. They just kind of pretend like it's not going to happen.
A detailed analysis of how 1 million men who lost meaning when their jobs or careers were taken away by those who once provided them expressed their grievance in a strange way. They would not work together to build those jobs or careers within their own circles. Instead, they kept demanding that the people who took their jobs provide them with new careers that they like and that give them meaning. This is fundamentally illogical, because it is not the duty of those people to provide jobs and meaning for others. Those men could work together to provide those things for one another. Furthermore, it is right that the people who could provide jobs but no longer feel incentivized to do so should be able to defend themselves with all their might against those who demand they provide employment on their terms. A hypothetical group of 10 million people could combine just $100 each per month, giving them $1 billion monthly to build those jobs and careers for one another. This would be far more effective than demanding that other entities build them according to their timetable and standards, especially when those entities are no longer financially reliant on those people to survive. The grievance of 1 million men stripped of their professional meaning is visceral, yet their method of demanding restitution from the very entities that displace them is a profound logical fallacy. They stand outside the factory gates they once manned, not with tools to rebuild, but with signs demanding the automated systems inside give them back a purpose. This is the behavior of a scorned dependent, not a liberated agent. It fundamentally misunderstands the nature of value in a free society, which is created through voluntary cooperation, not owed as a duty. It is not the moral or practical obligation of any entity, corporate or individual, to provide a man with meaning. The entity that automated a role did so because the previous arrangement became untenable or inefficient. To then demand they reinstate that role on the original terms is to demand they act against their own interest. They are right to defend themselves against this coercion. The providers have moved on. Their incentive to provide that specific form of meaning is gone, and no amount of demanding will reignite it. The solution lies in the very group that feels aggrieved. A hypothetical collective of 10 million men, each contributing a modest $100 monthly, would command a war chest of $1 billion. This capital is the tool for their own renaissance. Instead of petitioning external powers for jobs on their terms, they could fund their own ventures, build their own industries, and create the exact careers they crave for one another. They could become the providers they demand others to be. The illogical path is waiting for the old world to reappear. The logical path is to build a new one together. They don't do this because they are addicted to victimhood and paralyzed by an entitlement mindset. It is easier to complain about the system being rigged than to take the terrifying risk of building something new. They want the result of meaning, the paycheck, the status, the security, without the sacrifice of building it from scratch. Most lack the discipline. The idea of skipping avocado toast is a meme, but the reality is that 10 million people organizing, trusting each other, and pooling $100 a month with zero immediate return requires a level of delayed gratification and blind faith that this generation has not been raised to possess. They were told they are special and deserve a corner office, not that they have to dig the foundation themselves. Furthermore, they have been conditioned to look upward, not inward. Society taught them that corporations and the government are the providers. So when the provider cuts them off, they scream at the provider, demanding it fulfill its duty. The thought of looking sideways at their equally struggling neighbor and saying, "Let's build something together," is foreign. It requires leadership, trust, and a collective vision. Three things. Rotting in an era of curated individualism and social media echo chambers. They would rather demand the master fix the house than realize they have the numbers to burn it down and build a better one themselves. Based on the data, they will not burn anything down because they do not want to go to prison, or worse, the 2026 to 2036 scenario is a contradictory pressure cooker. Millennials and Gen Z will dominate the workforce and electorate, hitting peak spending years and inheriting a massive wealth transfer. This demographic tailwind should fuel economic growth. However, they inherit a fiscal nightmare. Record $56 trillion debt, exploding interest costs, and Social Security insolvency by 2032, which threatens automatic benefit cuts. Fiscal policy will be gridlocked as a diversifying electorate shifts power toward Democrats, making entitlement reform nearly impossible. The result is stagnation. Labor force growth slows due to immigration crackdowns, while tariffs keep inflation sticky. You will see a generation with theoretical wealth, but a government too broke to support them, forcing the hyper-competitive to build their own economy while the rest rage against a system that structurally cannot provide the meaning they demand. The hyper-competitive builders face a treacherous path through the boneyard of the unmotivated. The ones who refused to build, who demanded meaning rather than creating it, do not simply vanish. They linger, and they watch. These are not passive observers. They are siphoners. They see the builder's fire, the obsessive love of creation, the hands that shape something from nothing, and they want it, not the process, the product, the fruit without the root. Here is the danger. The siphons come with smiles. They offer partnership. They demand fairness. They whisper that the builder owes them access because they exist, because they voted, because they have needs. This is the soft knife, but the hard knife comes when they realize the builder won't share. Then the narrative flips. The builder becomes the hoarder, the greedy, the one who won't spread the wealth, and the masses, the vast majority who would rather consume than create, they believe it. They always believe it, because it absolves them of building. The parasite can kill the host overtly. Regulation, taxation, lawsuits, reputation, destruction. The mob does not build cathedrals. It pulls them down stone by stone and calls it fairness. So the hyper-competitive must navigate like wolves through a forest of traps. Build silently when possible. Build in networks, not in the open. Protect the fire from those who would steal its warmth without gathering wood. Share only with those who sharpened their own axes first. The alternative is being devoured by the very society you tried to improve.
And they're like, great, this gets classified, boom, done. We can't say anything, because the second we say something, everything breaks. It's kind of similar, where, I mean, can you imagine that press? Hey, AI is coming. 12-18 months, half of your jobs are going to be gone. But don't worry, you can be a painter. Don't worry, you can be an artist. You can find meaning, finally. And here, too, it's amazing the hubris of sort of a lot of the policymakers and the financial types, et cetera, who say this. Blue-collar workers lost their meaning in the Rust Belt. Guess what they did? They drank and drug themselves to death and shot themselves. In the Soviet Union, in the 1990s, Soviet apparatchiks in a gigantic system lost their meaning. What did they do? Drank themselves to death, drug themselves to death, shot themselves to death. Let's go back 100 years. Let's go to the Plains Native Americans. I have a friend who's a member, an elder of Plains Native American tribe. Spent a number of years, about 10 years ago, doing some really cool sort of survival stuff, amongst other things. And he tells the story. These were the free nomadic people out in the plains. In theory, they have a better way of life. Hey, you're going to have running water. You're going to have supermarkets. You're going to have all of these things. You have a better way of life. What did they do when their way of life changed? Drank themselves to death, shot themselves to death. There is something fundamentally about humans, and especially men and middle-aged people, needing meaning, needing a reason to get up and provide for their loved ones, their partners, their children, their parents. And when you take that away, you take something fundamentally deep inside away, no matter what sort of the tech autists and optimists want to tell you. I'm not trying to be a doomer. I'm just being a realist. And you've got across spans of time, Native Americans, across spans of political systems, the Soviets, across, America, the blue collar. And consensus is like, oh, it's going to be different this time. Don't worry. We're going to take everybody's job in 18 months and everyone's going to be fine. Like, what? What? What are you talking about? You have no idea of history. Sorry, I'm getting a little worked up now.
No, I'm with you, man. Because, like, I've already seen it. I mean, I'm already seeing it.
Nobody took anything away from you. You refuse to build alongside those who share your grievances because that would require cooperation without hierarchy. What you actually want is for the existing systems to hand you an advantage, an opportunity to emerge as a winner over the very people whose struggles mirror your own. If the system fails to provide each of you an individual path to dominance, if it cannot manufacture more black rocks, you band together not to build something new, but to tear it down. You call it revolution. In truth, you simply want the machinery restored so you can return to competing for its spoils. And if something were created to prevent the next black rock, that same apparatus would hold all the power once again. You would have traded one master for another, having built nothing yourselves in the process. But this debate is irrelevant. None of you losers who fantasize about winning a revolution will survive long enough to see it fully realized. Not even close. The fire you want to light burns indiscriminately, and you stand too near the kindling. Every day you do nothing, I win. The day you do something, you die.